it gives me great pleasure to introduce our next guest. Great pleasure. Karen and her husband, Jonathan, are the founders of Choices Media. And it's through this enterprise that they seek to equip young people with knowledge, skills and motivation to make good choices. Part of the ways that they do this is through values-based sexuality education, leadership training and staff development. Karen has a bachelor's degree in nursing and is completing a master's degree in marriage and family studies. She's also a wife, a mother of three beautiful children, who this weekend are with Dad. So Mum's had a good night's sleep. Probably the first time in how many years?
Five.
About five.
That could be interesting, I'm wired.
Karen frequently speaks at retreats and conferences on relationships and marriage. And apart from being a brilliant speaker, she is also a very beautiful person. So please make her feel welcome.
Yay. That's quite a wrap. Thank you. I don't know if any of you have heard Jonathan and I speak before, but obviously we do this quite a lot, so we get a lot of introductions. And one introduction we had was at a conference in Singapore a number of years ago, and this lady was very keen to introduce us. And she said, you know, Karen and Jonathan are Australia's foremost educators in sex, and they make their own DVDs. So 2,000 people were like, oh, so you're those kind of people. So we said, we make DVDs and resources about the topic of sexuality and pornography and all that great stuff. So thanks for your introduction this morning. I know, we're jumping first, but it is really lovely to be here. I spoke 3 years ago at the retreat, and each year Elizabeth has invited me back, but this year I've been able to accept, which is really nice. And I walked in the doors last night and I had this full-on trauma response, because 3 years ago when I was here, I had my little boy Aiden, and he was 6 months old, and I spent from 11 p.m. till 6 a.m. walking from this end of the corridor to the other, and then having to speak the next day. So my kids never sleep. We couldn't have kids for 6 years, and it was like God said, I'm going to make sure you know you've got them. So I throw up for 9 full months, go into hospital multiple times, and then my kids don't sleep for the first year. But anyway, last night I slept. So you better ring Jonathan and tell him I'm not coming home. It was really good. But look, it's a real pleasure to be here, and it's really lovely to be with the girls. I have the privilege of speaking at men's events as a woman, and speaking to men's groups about, I guess, insights into the hearts of women. And one of my favourite gigs is the Young Men of God conference, which is in October last year, and there's some flyers up the back there if you know a man, put one in his hand. But you can be giving a talk to a group of guys and they give you nothing. You can be doing the most earth-shattering, life-changing talk and they're like, and you can be talking to the women and you can be doing the worst job on earth and they're smiling and encouraging you. So I love the guys, but it's really nice to be with you women this morning. Just thought I'd give you a bit of a context for my life, because often when you speak, you know, you can look like you have it all together and have all the answers, but really you're just like everybody else. And so I thought I'd just put myself in a picture for you. So this first picture is just a picture of, I don't know if you can see it, that's Jonathan and I on our wedding anniversary this year. I don't know. Have you got another one there? Thanks. And this is our little crew. So we had three kids under 3.5 last year. And so we said to the Carmelite nuns, they can stop praying for children now. Thank you for your prayers. But anyway, Olivia, you can go, do mine, thanks. Olivia, Catherine, Aidan, James and Stephanie Grace. And Olivia just turned 5, Aidan's 3 and Stephanie's 18 months. So that's my little crew. And I think there's one more. This is the week after Stephanie was born at home. So I know, well, I wasn't vomiting anymore, so I felt great. But anyway, that's my little family. And I've been married to Jonathan for almost 12 years, and it's been a great adventure. And we've had our highs and lows, our joys and our triumphs, just like anybody else. But it has been quite a journey. And you guys are here this weekend, or you women are here this weekend, on your own journey. You've made time and drawn aside out of the busyness of your life to make time and space to hear the Lord, to really try and hear what it is he's calling you to, what your vocation is. And it's a great word, vocation. It comes from the word vocare, which means to call forth. So at the beginning of this morning, I just invite you to reflect, what is it that you feel God is calling forth in you? What is he calling you from? And what is he calling you to? And I was talking to a great man of God yesterday, and I was talking, in my life at the moment, we just got a few little challenges, not in our marriage, but just life happens and some things happening. And I like train tracks. I like to go from one season straight to the next. So don't cope well when, you know, you don't quite know what's coming next. And he said to me that a vacuum's a good thing, that you leave a season and you fall into this vacuum for a while before the new season starts. And that's a really sacred place where God speaks. So just to have a think for a moment this morning, what is God calling forth in you? What is that vacuum in your life? Where is he calling you to? For those of you who know me, you will know that one of my great passions in life is to communicate John Paul II's teachings on womanhood. And one of his role models, one of the women that really laid a foundation for him in terms of his thinking on women was Edith Stein. And she's otherwise known as St. Benedicta of the Cross. And she was a great woman of God. She was a Carmelite nun, and she was killed in a concentration camp during the Second World War. Now, what she contributed to Catholic philosophy, Catholic theology, was really groundbreaking for her time. And in her essays on women, she identifies three vocations that we all have. She says, to begin with, we have a universal vocation, that as men and women, we are created in the Imago Dei, in the image and the likeness of God. We are created in love and we are created for love. Secondary to this, she said, we have a vocation which is unique to our gender. So men in their masculinity have a vocation in being male. And as women, we have a vocation that is unique to being a woman, the vocation of womanhood. And finally, we have an individual vocation, that while we're here on planet Earth, each one of us is called to bring something to birth, something to life, and it will be different from the person who sits alongside you, no better or worse, simply different. But each of these, a universal, gender-specific and individual vocation, are all grounded in a call to love. And this morning what I'd like to do is to look at this call to love within the context of marriage. Because I can tell you it is a call to love. It is a vocation. It is the place where you will get your rough edges rubbed off you. It is a place where all your uglies will come to the surface, your insecurities, your wounds, everything that is horrible will come to the surface. And it is a place where God will call you to holiness if you're open, if you're receptive to that. And in my own life, that has been the case. It has been the best 12 years of my life, but every year gets better. And I have to say, during our dating, we went to the Carmelites out at Barraville, and Father Greg Homing was Jonathan's spiritual director. He said the success of your marriage will depend on your individual personal prayer life. That's what the success of your marriage will depend on, how well you cultivate your personal relationship with the Lord. And I can tell you that is true. There are times where you get busy and you're not as attentive to those daily moments of prayer, and that is when things run off the track. But if you're focused on the Lord, then you're able to love with his love, and marriage is that call to holiness, that vocation. The danger in our culture, and I think especially in the church, is that we don't understand what marriage actually is, and this is what we'll look at this morning. And despite attending retreats like these, a lot of young couples go into marriage only to find themselves in the early years in a state of discontent, asking questions like, you know, was I really a Christian when I said I do? And that priest, well, he was 80 years of age until death do us part. I mean, he's pretty close to death, but I'm 22 and, you know, death is a long way away. He surely can't have been serious. And I tell you, these aren't people out in the world thinking these questions. These are the Catholics that you rub shoulders with every day. And so what I'd like to do this morning is to take a look at some of the reasons why people find themselves in a state of discontent in the early years of marriage. John's got a great saying, he said, you know, you can learn by a gentle word or a piece of timber. You know, you can learn by getting belted over the head with a piece of timber the hard way, or you can save yourself a trip to hell and back and learn by a gentle word by other people's wisdom who have walked before you. So I'll just give you a quick roadmap. What I'm going to do is to give you a bit of input for about 40 minutes. We'll start by looking at, I guess, the four key areas where I feel people kind of go wrong, or that they don't understand or they're not aware of. And then I'd like to look at how you can spiritually prepare now for marriage. Some of you will be single, some of you will be discerning religious life, some of you might be dating or engaged. Now, some of you might not go on to be married, but you will date, possibly. So what will you do? How will you prepare your heart for that season and for marriage, if that is what God calls you to? So we might jump into the first part. So if you're taking notes, we can go part one, part two, part three. I like Elizabeth and I were talking about our personalities. We're both really similar, very organised and neat and contained. So that's what you'll get with me. So these are, I guess, some key areas to be mindful of. And so we'll start with the depressing stuff and we'll work our way out. So you'll feel good, I promise, by the time you leave. I just thought I'd start by telling you a little story about a couple. And there's this couple and they've been married for 19 years. But when they started dating, they went into their dating relationship very quickly. They got engaged soon after and they didn't take time. They didn't take time to really discern whether this is the right person for them. They were caught up in the feelings. You know, he could do no wrong. He went to every chick flick known to man. She went to every football game. It was perfect. They were in love and they got married. But after they were married, not long after, he stopped talking. They used to talk lots and lots and lots. And this is sometimes how it goes. He withdrew further into himself and she realised that he really wasn't able to communicate. That was something that he was doing to win her heart when they were dating. So after 19 years of marriage, he recognised that he was hurting his wife and he thought, okay, I'll do something about it. So he enrolled himself in a Toastmasters course. I'm not quite sure how that was going to help, but public speaking training. So he went along. So this evening he was preparing to go. So for those of you who know Toastmasters, you have to prepare a speech each week and then you have, when you get there, they give you an impromptu topic and you have to present that. So his impromptu topic, the topic for the group, this guy wrote up on the board, was S-E-X. And he was like, oh my gosh, how embarrassing. Like, I've got to talk about sex to a group of strangers. So he does it and he goes home and he enters the room and his wife's still up. And he was very annoyed because he was hoping she was in bed. And she said, you know, how did it go? And she wanted to talk. And he said, yeah, it went good. And she said, well, what was your topic? And he said, oh, it was the sailing. But it went well, I'm going to bed. And off he goes. The next day, she goes to the grocery shop. And lo and behold, she doesn't run into someone from the Toastmasters course. And this lady comes up, she goes, your husband, he's just come so far. He did a really great impromptu talk last night. And his wife was like, really? And she was like, yeah, he really seemed to know his stuff. And she's like, well, that's funny. He doesn't know much about the topic. I mean, the first time he did it, his hat blew off, and the second time he couldn't stop vomiting. So, so I don't know if that's a true story, but it illustrates a couple of points. And the main one that I'd like to make is this point of time. That you have to, if you want to choose a mate, you need to take time. It's the critical ingredient. You know, courtesy of Time Warner and Hollywood, we've all been told stories from a very young age about sex, love and marriage, in that order, that don't help us because they're not accurate and they leave us confused and disillusioned. But choosing a mate is a really big decision and it needs to be taken a lot of time with. Where am I? Okay, last retreat, I bought a box of Cadbury's chocolates. I think I ate them all before the talk. But I made the analogy about choosing a mate is kind of like choosing a chocolate from the all sorts. That, you know, you open the book and the description is amazing and the description of the guy on the internet dating site is amazing and you bite into this chocolate only to find that you made the wrong choice and even worse, that the taste is actually unbearable and that you can't live with it. And I like that analogy because with choosing a mate, we need to discern it. We need to have people who are walking with us. We need to know some foundational tools. And the key question that you need to ask is not can I live without him, but can I live with him? Because a lifetime, excuse the expression, is a bloody long time. It's a really long time. And you need to know that you can live with this man, with all of his stuff, for the rest of your life. So these are the four key areas. We'll just start with the first one. And the first one is that great word, L-O-V-E, love. Now, I'd sing for you, except you probably all leave the room. It's not pretty. Jonathan can sing, but I cannot. The kids have even started saying, oh, Mum, don't sing. So it's shut down. But that word, love, you know, a lot of people make the mistake of seeing marriage as the culmination, not the beginning. They work towards this day. They plan, they save, they do everything for this wedding day. But they wake up the next morning and they kind of forget that, oh, we've got a marriage here that we forgot to plan for. And I just want to say that, and this isn't just because Kiara's in the room, but if you are dating and engaged, marriage prep the only one to do that I think is embrace this fantastic program. And if you want to know more about it, you can see me afterwards. But the website is smartloving.org. Okay, so Byron and Francine Parola do a lot of work in marriage enrichment and marriage preparation. And what I see is a lot of people failing to prepare for marriage. Our marriage preparation was abysmal. Like, it was just dreadful. But what I love about the Embrace program is how they use theology of the body, but they also couple it with the really practical rubber hits the road kind of dynamics of relationships. A lot of people kind of get lost between saying I do and the happily ever after. And I make the point to the young men of God at the conference that the chase for a woman's heart begins the day after you say I do. Marriage is not the culmination, it is the beginning of a lifetime together. If you think of, the other point I'll make is that marriage is not just a constant state. It's not unchanging. Because it's made up of two human persons who are constantly evolving themselves, marriage will evolve. It will change. You will become different people over the course of your time together. And being married is kind of like, I like my analogies, climbing into a box. If you can think of a cardboard box, you know, you look around for the perfect box mate and you climb inside and you get married, you're so in love, and then you make the decision to get married based on the feeling of love. But soon after you're married, you kind of realise that those qualities you found endearing during courtship are now immensely irritating. And you do. And you realise that you've lost that feeling of love. You've fallen out of love. So when you're in that situation, there's only two options available to you. You can either hop out of the box and go in search of a new box mate, but there's a lot of pain involved with that. The other option is you can turn your backs on each other, retreat to separate corners of your box, batten down the hatches, and resolve yourself to living in an unfulfilling and a disappointing marriage. And a lot of people do that too. But as I said, marriage is evolving. It's constantly changing. And if you are called to it, please go into it with your eyes wide open to that point. Life will happen to you. You know, things will happen. It will throw you things that you never expected. You know, there'll be life, there'll be kids, there'll be death of a parent, there'll be financial issues, there'll be death of possibly a child, infertility. There's any number of things that will happen. And if you've made the decision to be together based on that feeling of love, you will run into problems. Because that emotional high that you have, that intense euphoric feeling at the start of a relationship, actually has a lifespan and it has a physiological basis. It's called the romance cocktail. The hormone responsible for those feelings is actually oxytocin, which is a bonding hormone. You know, when a mother nurses her baby, she breastfeeds her child, it's released in huge quantities, so she bonds to her child. When a couple makes love in marriage, it's released, so they become one flesh, they bond to one another. And it's released in the early days of dating. And it's great. I think back 16 years ago, Jonathan chased me for 3 years. Some of you might have heard that story. And I wouldn't go out with him. And I was nursing at Cogra up here in Sydney, and he'd come up from Canberra, and we'd walk along the beach at Brighton Sands. And now, all these years, and it was magical. It was truly a magical time of life. But 16 years later, I just have to smell like someone with his aftershave, and it brings back all those feelings. It was beautiful. I fly into Sydney each time and you see the Novotel, and that's where we had our first kiss, and it's like, oh, the Novotel. So I know I'm telling the kids the story, so whenever we drive past, it's like, Daddy, kiss Mum now. Anyway. But that feeling still carries me, but it's not the basis for our relationship. And that euphoric, wonderful, magical feeling has a lifespan of about 2 to 3 years because you can't sustain the intense feelings. Love is not a feeling you feel, it is a decision you make, often in spite of how you're feeling. And I can tell you there are times in marriage after 12 years where you don't feel loving feelings towards one another, but you still act in loving ways. In his book, Love and Responsibility, before he became Pope, John Paul II wrote a chapter on sensuality and sentimentality. He said that yes, there is a level of emotionality in falling in love, but he said, love is actually an act of the will. It is a decision and it is an act of the will. And we often say that when you hear a speaker, no matter how good they are, you probably only remember about 8% of what they say. So let this be an 8% moment, that love is an act of the will. And he says that love is to will the good of another. Love is to will someone else's good, to will their virtue, to will their holiness, to will their goodness, their growth in character. Love is an act of the will, and to will the good of another person. The second point that people aren't always aware of is that they have unrealistic expectations. They often go into marriage without having unpacked some of the critical issues, like who will handle money, how do you handle money? If when you have children, you know, as a mother, will you work, will you stay at home, what's his expectation? There's expectations around a whole lot of things that need to be unpacked before you get married. What is reasonable? What is realistic? And I just want to give you two sides of a coin on this topic of expectations. On one side, I see women who don't expect enough in their relationships with men. They settle for less. Quite often, they'll settle for any male in their fear of being alone. And I just want to say that there are far worse things than being single and lonely. Believe it or not, you can be married and be far lonelier than you were in your single days. You can be far, far lonelier, far, far, feel far, far more alone than you could have imagined. And I walk with a lot of women in that position. And Jonathan's just written a book talking about how to get the man of your dreams, about not settling for less than what you're worth. Because too many girls in our culture are devaluing themselves in the way they dress, in terms of their sexuality, giving themselves away way before they should be, before they're ready to. So that's one side of the coin, that women and girls don't expect enough. On the other side is women who expect too much. And Jonathan and I had the privilege of studying at the John Paul II Institute, and we came across Theology of the Body 3 years into our marriage, and I can tell you it has enriched and changed our marriage in wonderful ways, and it's also, I guess, set the direction for our life work, what we do with our life. But in the year after I left the Institute, I get calls and emails, and I still do, from young women who studied there, and they found the man of their dreams, and they're so excited, and they get married, and they ring me within weeks, and they say, oh, it's not like John Paul II's Theology of the Body. They're having a nervous breakdown. And I want to say, well, honey, of course it's not, because his Theology of the Body is a vision of perfection, of heavenly perfection, of the way God intended it to be. But we're living in a fallen world where, believe it or not, you are fallen and sinful and you have issues, and he will have issues too. And so it's not going to be perfect. And I think what Theology of the Body needs to be said, because I see it with so many young women, is it is a vision to work towards. But don't think that you're going to have it all perfectly. So there's those two sides of the coin. Women should have high expectations of men in how men treat them. They should expect a lot. Because when you set the bar high, if he is a man worthy of you, worthy of your respect and your care and your person, then he will arise to meet that occasion. He will. And he will fight. And there's something hardwired into the DNA of men that likes a challenge. So, you know, we esteem... Well, anyway, I won't give you that quote because I kind of forgot it. So I won't give you that one. What is it? It's Augustine. We don't value, basically, what we... We don't value the things we give away. That's the gist of it anyway. But so expectations, things to expect is respect and care, honesty, openness. Just keep those things in mind. Expect a lot. Because in the presence of a godly woman, a real woman, a man is really, it calls something from him, calls him to be a man of God. So the first one is love. Secondly, unrealistic expectations. And thirdly, past baggage. Once that euphoric feeling settles down, you know, believe it or not, no matter how pretty you are, you do have uglies in your life, myself included, and they come to the surface once you're in relationship and once life settles down. It's not nice, but it's necessary. And if your heart is receptive, this is where God is going to really work in your life and call you to holiness. Always keep that in mind. Marriage is a vocation. It is a call to love. It is a call to holiness. Never forget that. Family life is like holding up a mirror, parenting especially. I thought I had all the answers before I had kids. And as each child's come along, you realise you don't have any at all. But the first point I'll make on this is sort out your own baggage. Use this season as a single woman to work through your issues. Don't be afraid. Don't spend your years running from them, but confront them. You're here this weekend and you've had the opportunity for spiritual direction. You know, don't let that just be a one-off retreat experience. Seek a spiritual director to walk with you once a month. If you really do have genuine deep wounds, seek a good clinical psychologist who can help you. You know, pray. Have an older woman who can walk alongside you. Prepare yourself now so you're in a stronger position if and when a guy comes along. The danger is that a lot of women have deep questions of their worth and their value. And the danger in relationships is they go to men to have that question answered, where it's just never going to work that way. You know, God is the one who needs to answer your question about your worth, your value, your dignity as a woman. For men, they often go to women to have that question of strength answered. Am I strong? Am I enough? Where they need to go to the Lord first. Because men and women will only be able to serve one another in relationship when they have had those questions answered by God, and only then can they approach one another from a position of strength. So sort out your baggage, and secondly, know what his baggage is. Don't rush the stages. Last time I talked about Desmond Morris, he's a psychologist, and he did a lot of work and study of couples who had been married for over 50 years. And he looked at the common denominators. And the one thing he said was that they took time to walk through each stage of relationship. And he identified 12 stages, from noticing a person right up to sexual intimacy within marriage. And he said, you have to take time. You know as well as I do, we see it on the TV, we know people who are having sex and then introducing themselves to one another. But, you know, it takes a lot of time to get to know a person. You know, Jonathan will say after 16 years of friendship, he goes, wow, you still surprise me. Still am exploring the depths of who you are. That's the way it should be. We took 3 years to become friends. You know, friendship is just something that's unheard of in relationships, in our culture, quite often. Know what is in his bags. There's a great saying that says, go into marriage with your eyes wide open and then keep them half open after that. Because just know, I know a woman, when I was engaged to Jonathan, said, just know what's in the bags. Unpack them all and then put it away, but just know what's in those bags. Know that you can live with those things. The final point here is just that people often don't see the red flags. And the red flags are the walk away signs. The walk away signs. This is when you should be walking away from a relationship. When alcohol and drugs are involved. Gambling. An attitude that is possessive and controlling. Someone who is violent and has a bad temper. And a guy who has an issue with pornography. I can tell you that in the work Jonathan and I do, we get to do a lot of speaking, but we also get to do a lot of listening. And what we hear in the hearts of many people is a lot of pain when they haven't thought through their choice of a life partner. And they've come into the early years of marriage only to realise that all these things are really big and major issues. Just remember, dating is designed to conceal, not to reveal. When you're dating a person, if you see issues, I guarantee you, I'll bet anything on it, that the issues you have in dating will only become more evident and bigger once you're married. Because dating is designed to conceal, not to reveal. So if you notice things, you need to step back. If there are some of these walk-away signs, you need to step back and you need to give him some space. A guy has to take responsibility for his life. And too often I see girls, and I be as bold to say that I think it's really arrogant and prideful when women think that their love will transform a man. You know, oh, he'll change, I'll change him. You can't. And it's not fair to think that you would, and it's not your job. You know, it's the Lord's job to change his heart, to change his sinful patterns of behaviour. You can confront him with those and ask him to take responsibility, give him space and time to work it out. And I tell you, if the guy in your life has an issue in this area and you step back, you will be scared of losing him. But if he is worth you, you know, if he's worthy of your love, he will go away and work those out and he'll come back to you. There's this whole concept of a distancer and a pursuer. You know, the person that pursues, there's the other person who's being pursued and they feel suffocated, so they distance. But quite often if you distance and he's left with his crap and he'll be left with the question of, do I really want her? Am I going to fight for her and what the man I need to be? Then he will work things out and then he will pursue. It's a dynamic that's, you know, very evident in a lot of relationships. They're just some of the things to be aware of, and I hope that in that you've got some ideas about discerning and choosing a mate carefully. Because this is a great season of your life. You know, I'm a big believer in living each season to its fullest. You know, in the Bible it says there's a time and season for everything. And there is a time and a season to be single. You know, there is a time and season for that. And so some of the things that you can do now to spiritually prepare for marriage are dealing with your baggage. That's a big one. Is to use this season just to work on your issues. Get to know yourself, because you can't give what you don't possess. If you don't know yourself, then how can you be there for another person? As much as you can in this season. Cultivate your relationship with the Lord. Yeah, thanks. Cultivate your relationship, personal relationship with Jesus. I told you that story about Father Greg. You know, your marriage will only be successful as far as your personal relationship is growing with the Lord. And that has been so true in our life. Train yourself now in true, authentic Christian love. Use this season to grow in that ability to love as God loves, to will the good of another, not to be a doormat and to be walked over, because there is a place for speaking the truth in love and having boundaries, but grow in your ability for authentic Christian love. Live your season. Don't sit back waiting for him to come. Don't just put your life on hold, because sadly he might not come. You might not be called to marriage. That might not be what God has in store for you. You know, don't sit back and just wait for it to happen. Keep living your life. Keep growing. Have a full life and live your season now. And finally, have someone who can walk with you, who can be a mentor or a spiritual mother on the journey. There's a lot of great sisters who you've met. There's a lot of great married women. We all need spiritual mothers and older sisters in the Lord to walk alongside us. So they're just some of the things that I think, and we can have a talk about this more in a little while, but they're just some of the things that I think are really important to put in place now.